Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome back to Paranormal Activity with me, Yvette Fielding. And today we'll be chatting about all things paranormal with a very, very lovely friend of mine. Welcome back to another Paranormal Activity episode. And as always, we kick things off with this week's fact or fiction and listen for the answer at the end. Here it is. Can you get a ghost to haunt your enemy? Is this fact or fiction? Find out at the end of the show. Now then, I am thrilled, because this gentleman who we're about to have a chat with is a very lovely, lovely and dear friend of mine. He's a prolific writer and worked on Coronation Street for 25 years writing the scripts. He's also written many, many books and theatre production, theatre plays. And he's just written my memoir, Scream Queen, which is coming out on May the 29th. It's the gorgeous Martin Sterling. Welcome to the show.
Hello there. How are you?
Hey, all the better for speaking to you. Is this where you're going to be all polite now and radio-ish?
I'm very polite.
When normally you're outrageous. So one of the things that sort of we had in common really right from the very start was, well, you were a fan of Most Haunted, and that's really how we met. Do you want to explain?
Yes, it was. In fact, we met on the set of Coronation Street. It was it Series 7 of Most Haunted? And I was absolutely thrilled when I heard you were coming along.
You know more about this than I do, let me tell you. Sorry, go on.
I think it was Series 7. I think it was 2005. And I was absolutely thrilled that you were coming to Coronation Street. And of course, you came for a reason, because that old set was notoriously badly haunted. I mean, it was a great night, wasn't it? We just hit it off completely, didn't we, when we met?
I don't know, it's
absolutely. Perhaps because we're both Northern.
Same sense of humour. But tell us a little bit, because you've got a brilliant memory. That's why you're a fantastic writer, because you sort of soak up all this stuff. Where I've got such a terrible memory. People will say to me, oh, Yvette, do you remember when you went and did such and such a place? And I think, I can't remember. But you seem to sort of remember all the dates and everything. So what were the hauntings at Coronation Street? Why were we called in the first place? Can you remember that?
I don't remember why you were called in, but apart from the fact that it was the stories, there were so many stories. I mean, I experienced some things myself, not apparitions. I mean, I know that some people did. And on the programme, we investigated the Studio One. This is the old Coronation Street set, we should specify, the one in Key Street in Manchester. It's now moved to Media City in 2013. And that old set now has, I think, has been demolished. The studio was very badly haunted, and there were so many stories of people seeing full apparitions. I heard a story of once they were doing a scene in the indoor set of The Rover's Return, and the glass panel, the frosted glass, as they were filming, someone walked past, and the director went mad because that was so unprofessional. How dare someone interrupt a scene like that? And when they looked, there was no one there. And there were all sorts of stories. But my experiences were in the actual admin block, which was adjacent to the set. And our offices were on the third floor. And it was the days before open plan offices. I mean, I think there's a special place in hell reserved for whoever invented the open plan office. This was a proper thing, a corridor with offices either side, and you could work properly. And there were sort of our office, before I started, I joined in 2004. And before that, I heard a story of a storyliner had been working, she thought, late at night on her own in the office, and she was working along. And then suddenly she heard the sound of typing coming from another office down the corridor. And she said, oh, I wonder who else is working late. Do they fancy a brew? She went to the room, got to the door, and the sound stopped. And there was no one in the room. It was only then that she realised she had heard the sound of old-fashioned typing, not a computer keyboard.
Wow.
So fast forward a little bit, I've been there. I was working one Saturday morning. Again, I thought I was on my own. I heard some footsteps come down the corridor, and there were swing doors at the side, just outside our door, and I heard the doors go. And I thought, oh, that's interesting. I thought it was my own. Went to see. There was no one there. But then I always look for the rational explanation. And I thought it was perhaps one of the security guards doing his rounds, and he's just moved very quickly. I didn't get to see him. A little while later, I went through those doors to the area where the coffee machine was, and there was it led through to the producer's office, and there was a desk there where the PA sat. And I was making the coffee. Suddenly, knocking started on that from within that desk, and of course, I wasn't familiar with that. I know you are very familiar with the knocking. And I couldn't explain it, and that's what I experienced. Many, many years later, in fact, quite recently, I was speaking to someone who was a PA who worked in that office, and he said, oh, my God, no, really? And what his experience was, he'd been working there one Saturday morning when he thought he was alone. He'd nipped down to the loo, and when he came back, the swivel chair was turning as though someone had jumped off it, the same desk.
Wow.
So that was my experience.
Yeah, somebody obviously was, you know, haunting there, that perhaps used to work there, that was their seat, and perhaps really enjoyed what they were doing, and sort of reliving the moments, perhaps.
Yes, I mean, Pat Phoenix, who played Elsie Tanner, was very into the in ghosts and hauntings, and you know, there are suggestions that she did haunt that Studio One. After she passed away, I had heard that some of the security guards at the new building believe that some of the spirits had actually travelled with the production. But I don't know how true that was or not, or whether that was just stories. I mean, I don't know. I had no experience at the new building, which I find. I mean, Media City. So it's a wonderful place, and I lived there for a couple of hours. But it's quite a soulless place and a bit sterile, I think.
Tell us about some of the other ghostly phenomena that you've experienced throughout your life. I mean, whether you want to start off with the wonderful story, you sent me the photograph, and I think we should put it on our Instagram if that's all right with you, is that you were in the graveyard. You were in the graveyard and there was nobody there. And tell the story, because I remember you ringing me up and going, oh, my God, listen to this.
Well, it was Brompton Cemetery, actually, which is a wonderful place. I don't know if you've ever been. And anyone who's been there, it's one of the greatest cemeteries in this country. And what I love about it is that it's almost like a park now, and that it's where the living and children playing and dogs are being walked, and yet it's got this marvellous graveyard. And I've always been interested. One of my heroes was William Terrace, the Victorian actor who was murdered outside the Adelphi Theatre, and whose ghost is supposed to haunt both the theatre and Covent Garden Tube Station. I've always been fascinated by that story. And so that led me to Brompton Cemetery, because that's where he's buried. Because, I mean, if people don't know, this was the equivalent of John Lennon's murder. I mean, his funeral brought London to a standstill. He was a massive star in his time. He was the greatest star of Victorian theatre. And so, you know, and I went to find his grave. And it's Brompton Cemetery is a wonderful place for photography. There's so many photographers down there, because the shots you can get are fantastic. And I was taking, I'm a little bit of an amateur photographer myself, and I lined up a shot, and it was a video shot. And I cannot be 100% certain that the lady that is on the footage wasn't there. I can't be 100% certain that she's not a real lady who was standing there because, you know, I can't. But I can't believe that I would have taken that shot with her standing there, because it would have been a bit intrusive, I think. You know, she might have been someone mourning a grave. And you've seen the footage, and she's just standing there, and I couldn't explain it. And I didn't see it until I was editing the footage. I didn't actually see it at the time.
So just to explain, you took a photograph of this sort of vista of these beautiful gravestones, and there was nobody in it. That's from your memory.
As far as I'm aware, when I took the photograph, there was no one there.
Yeah. And then when you looked at the photograph, when you got home, the picture you'd taken, there's this woman, and she's standing in front of the grave. I think she's got her head down a little bit, maybe, as if she's actually, you know, talking or perhaps looking at a particular grave. She's gone there to visit this grave. Now, she's not dressed in an era of clothing. She just looks like a normal everyday lady, you know, of today's age. So I suppose I'm with you, though, because if you wanted a clear photograph of, you know, you're there to take photographs of gravestones and stuff, would you be there taking photographs and there's somebody standing there with a shopping bag, you know, that type of thing? You probably wouldn't.
That's just it. And I think why I wouldn't have taken it is because I thought, had she been visiting a grave, I wouldn't have taken the photograph of someone who might have been in a private moment. I think I wouldn't have knowingly taken that photograph had she been there, had I known she'd been there. But I cannot, hand on heart, say it's paranormal, because it may be perfectly, perfectly rational.
So what other experiences have you had that sort of got you intrigued with the paranormal and ghosts?
Well, I think my interest started Christmas 1973. I was only 18 months old, of course. I was about 11 years old. And it was Christmas 1973, and one of my presents was a book by Peter Underwood about British ghosts.
Oh, yes.
And interestingly enough, and what interested me about hauntings is that I hated history at school. Absolutely hated it. I mean, the Treaty of Versailles, treaties, battles, and everything like that. I didn't want to know, because I wanted to know the affairs and the scandal and everything. I wanted to know how people lived. So what I find with hauntings and reading about hauntings, and particularly with his books, you'd get some of the history of the people who were the ghosts, supposedly, and the history of the place. And that got me into hauntings, got me into history, and piqued my interest in history. And also my granddad was a little bit into things. I mean, he was very good. He could use the divining rods, which I can use as well, funnily enough. But he was so good at them that he worked for the Northwest Water Authority, and they would call him out in the middle of the night to get out his divining rods to find a burst pipe, because he could find it quicker than any equipment, any of them, mechanical equipment or anything. Granddad could find it. But he lived in a place called Tetlow Fold, which is between Hyde and Mottram. And there's a little lane that were two cottages where my grandparents lived. And the other side was a farm which dates back to about the 17th century. And he would always say that he would pass a woman in the lane at night. She never spoke, walked past him, never acknowledged him. And he said the strange thing was that it could be the most still of nights, but her hair and dress were blowing. And we always said, I mean, my granddad wasn't a drinker, you know, he didn't drink at all. But we always said, oh, come on, granddad, you've had one too many some night. He never did. I mean, a half was as much as he had. And then one night, my uncle and myself had gone to get some fish and chips, very prosaic, some fish and chips for everyone. We parked the car and I looked up the lane and this white shape was coming towards us. And he will verify this. Didn't look like a lady, didn't look like it didn't even look human. It just looked like a light coming towards us. And I'm afraid that our courage did desert us. One of us may have screamed like a girl. It could have been me. I don't know. We ran to the cottages. And then when we looked back, and this thing just passed the gate that we'd just come through. And to this day, I regret not standing my ground and seeing. But because of what my granddad had said, we just didn't have the courage to say, I'd be no good on an investigation, would I?
you'd be like me. That's the one thing that I regret, is seeing that those pair of legs at Drury Lane is turning and running. And I think, oh my God, you stupid cow, you should have just stayed there and sort of slyly got your night vision camera out and tried to record it. It's very strange, you know, because it just reminded me, whenever you try and film any paranormal activity, and we have managed to capture quite a lot, but they do seem to kind of shy away from it, or they'll do things just off camera. And there's a very famous place, as we all know, called Skinwalker Ranch. And I've spoken about this on the podcast before. The investigators there, they set up all these cameras all over the place, and the cameras will be moved by unseen hands, and then poltergeist activity will occur and they won't have captured it. So it's almost like they're actually enjoying messing with us, you know?
Well, it's funny you should say that, actually, because you talk about Drury Lane. I did many, many years ago, I did something for the BBC, a programme, a radio programme from there. And the then general manager, or had been a general manager, I think now he was just sort of like a PR person. And I'm sure he can't be with us because he was quite elderly at the time. But he took me around that theatre because I love that theatre. I mean, like you, I think that is the most wonderful. You could get a book out of Drury Lane itself, I think.
Yes.
And the history there. And when you go underneath, that original theatre, the foundations of the original theatre from the 17th century is still there, which I find fascinating. But there's a famous man in grey, and he took me, George, I think his name was, but I could be wrong, the chap that took me around. And he took me to where the man in grey sits. I think it's row D in the upper circle, isn't it? It took me there. The weirdest thing was that all the photographs I took in that theatre came out perfectly, apart from the ones I took on that spot, and everyone was ruined. Every single photograph had, it was bizarre. So it is strange what you said that about photography. It was also there so many years after that that I encountered the Lavender Ghost, which I didn't know about. I was visiting a friend of mine who was an actor backstage who'd had lots of experiences of the doors outside his dressing room. And I just happened to say this overpowering smell of lavender. And I said, oh, that's awful. It was really quite sickly. And they said, what are you talking about? And I said, can't you smell it, that lavender? And the audience went, oh, the Lavender Ghost, the lavender. And I knew nothing about that story at the time. But again, it could have been someone's overpowering aftershave.
The fact that they all reacted that way, I mean, I think that's fantastic. I never smelt any lavender while I was there, which was really frustrating. And I was hoping for a kick on the stage, because apparently that's something that happens as well. I mean, there are so many ghosts there. You're actually right. There is a book in Drury Lane. Maybe that's your next book to write, Martin.
Maybe.
Mm.
Welcome to Mum's the Word, the parenting podcast,
where we answer the questions you want to hear about parenthood
and provide you with real, honest advice for every stage of your parenting journey.
Whether you're a parent-to-be, a new mum like me, navigating those sleepless nights,
or a more experienced parent facing the challenges of raising older kids like me,
we've got you covered with relatable stories, expert insights, and plenty of laughs along the way.
So grab your headphones, a cup of coffee, or maybe something stronger,
and let's get real about parenting.
We're not going to be sugarcoating anything. From punamis to piles, nothing is off limits at Mum's the Word.
It's a podcast for all the parents out there, our own little club.
Mum's the Word.
Listen wherever you get your podcast from.
And hit follow so you don't miss an episode.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
So let's talk a little bit about the memoir and how wonderful you were at going back through the most haunted years and all the different episodes, because it's not just about my life. We talk about most haunted and we talk about certain hauntings. What part of that, apart from Drury Lane, because we do talk about that, but what other locations sort of stand out in your mind, because you're a Most Haunted fan, hence that's how we met, that you like, you enjoyed writing about?
I think the Edinburgh Vaults are fantastic. I think the East Drive just frightens me a little bit to write about that. I think it's somewhere I'd be really frightened to go. The Edinburgh Vaults just sound, I've never been, but I'd love to go down there because it just sounds fascinating. And it was, you could get the real feel of it. And also, of course, Pendle Hill. I mean, Pendle Hill really runs through everything, doesn't it, in a sense. You can't get away from Pendle Hill. In fact, one of my favourite chapters, I mean, they're all favourite chapters, obviously, because it's all about you, but the Pendle Hill and Drury Lane and the Edinburgh Vaults, I think they really stand out. And I also love the Queen Mary stuff because, I think like yourself a little bit, the more unusual the location, the more interesting I find it. Because the Queen Mary, I mean, what a place. What a location to investigate.
It was fantastic. And as you know, we actually stayed there and we had William and Mary, our children, stay with us and hearing, you know, every night footsteps in the bedroom and the lights turning on and off and, you know, and finding on the investigation itself and finding those wet footprints by the pool and just extraordinary. And it was just a gift that kept on giving. It was absolutely wonderful. For me, you know, one of my favourite unusual locations has to be the war rooms, Churchill's war rooms.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Oh, we were so honoured. I mean, it was just so wonderful to be told, you know, yes, you can spend the night here. Oh, my God. You know, they actually do tours, don't they? So you can, anybody that's interested, you can go to Churchill's War Rooms. They do tours every day. And if you haven't been and you're going to London, oh, please go, because it just takes you back in time. It's absolutely fantastic. Have you ever been, Martin?
I have, yes. I have indeed, yes. Because like you, I love anything to do with the Second World War and certainly the RAF. I was very cross with the RAF not accepting me when I wanted to join because my eyesight let me down. But my career would have been very different had they taken me. But no, anything to do with that. And also those, which is very close to where I live, RAF West Raynham, which was, I came on one of the nights on that investigation and that was incredible. That was an incredible location.
It was, and I know I've spoken about it on the podcast, but it really sticks out. And one of the reasons, there were many, many reasons, but one of the reasons was this incredible vocal anomaly, which was, and it was the very first time we had it. I think we had it again on a second location, but I can't remember which one it was. But this vocal anomaly that we were getting was static in the air. And it was talking to us. And I would say, can you say my name, Yvette Fielding? And it went, it was just the most incredible thing. So it was, you could hear the syllables being spoken, but it was electricity. And that to me was, that was a real breakthrough. And I remember the audio or the sound guys that were doing the live show, they were desperately trying to figure out, they sent it off to be analysed and they came back with, this is, we have no answer to what this is. It's not mineral, vegetable, human. There is no logical explanation as to what this noise could be. It's a complete mystery to us and fascinating. And it stands out in my mind as just being incredible. And then we went to another location and something similar happened there, and I can't remember which one it was, and I thought, oh my god, we're on a roll here, we're gonna get voices from the dead that everybody can hear. And then bang, just like that, it stopped. And that, to me, I was pulling my hair out going, why have you stopped talking to us like that, you know? So maybe we have to, I don't know, I myself, the team, we have to work on this energy and build it up some more to get that electronic voice phenomena. You know, I know we call it EVP, but real electronic static in the ether. So yes, RAF Raynham is another fantastic place for me. So you being a wonderful writer and, you know, your first theatre stage play that you wrote, actually, you mention Most Haunted, don't you? Or you do a seance or something in it? I can't remember.
Yes, I do. Yes, yes. It was a thriller. It was a stage thriller called Framed. And there was a paranormal element to it. And, you know, is there a ghost? Isn't there a ghost? Or is someone... I mean, the whole purpose of the thing is that... the central character's female character is in a new relationship with a man she's met on the internet, but is he to be trusted? Or is she being driven mad by someone else who's leading to believe the cottage that they're in is haunted, but is the ghost real or is it all manufactured? And it was very successful. I mean, it was more thriller than paranormal piece. But yes, there was a seance in the second act and there were references to Most Haunted.
Fantastic. So what's next for you then? What are you going to be concentrating on, do you think? Have I made you more intrigued in the paranormal than ever before since writing the memoir?
Very much so. I'm intrigued. I've always been intrigued, but writing about it and revisiting the episodes that you've done and the evidence you've got and speaking to you, we've been working on this for about a year now, haven't we?
Yeah.
And it's really, really made me want to do more. I'd like to write more about the paranormal. And also, I think, because this is the first time I've actually worked on anyone's memoirs, and it's been such a thrill to do it and such a joy to work with you. And because I knew a little bit, obviously, because we've known each other for such a long time. But, you know, even away from Most Haunted, your life's incredible. And the friendships. I mean, I loved writing the stuff with you and Paul O'Grady. That stuff with Paul O'Grady that you did ghost hunting with in the catacombs at Palermo was just incredible. And looking again at that footage.
Yeah, that was a very emotional bit of filming, it because none of us really knew. We'd heard about it. And as I always say, when I go on an investigation or film, you know, people say, would you like to have a look around the location before we film? And I always say no. Oh, and they looked a little bit like, oh, rude cow. But I don't mean it like that. The reason why, and you'll understand, is because I want to the reaction is a true reaction to where your surroundings and the stories. And I think that should be captured on camera. So I didn't go down into the catacombs until the cameras were rolling, and neither did Paul. And it was, oh God, I'll just never forget it as long as I live. It was actually traumatic.
Had you gone down beforehand, do you think you would have done it? Or would you think you might have pulled the plug? Because I think had I gone down there and part of me is actually fascinated by seeing all those bodies just lying there, but the one with the little girl in what was her name?
Rosalia.
Rosalia is heartbreaking to see her. Heartbreaking, isn't it?
Yeah, and for those people who don't know about the catacombs in Palermo, basically They've been kept open by the monks there, the Capuchin monks. And what they do is, for hundreds of years, they don't do it now, obviously, but for hundreds of years, if the locals who died, they would embalm them, but they would dress them. So they would be, I mean, you've got men, they look very skeletal, but they've got skin, their eyelashes, their hair is still there, and they're hanging on a bloody wall. And then you've got, and then you have to walk down this very narrow passageway, and you've got human remains hanging on your right-hand side and human remains hanging on your left. Women, men, and then you get adolescents. And as you go further down, then you get children in prams. And this Rosalia, it really affected me, and more so Paul. And we actually had footage of Paul singing to this little girl, this little baby who died, obviously. I can't remember what she died of, but it was, I think, tuberculosis or something like that. And like I say, rosy little red cheeks, little eyelashes. She just looks like she's sleeping.
And, yeah, because she is, Paul, unlike the others, is perfectly preserved, isn't she? She's unlike the others.
Yeah, that look a bit skeletal. So there he is, sat by the side of this glass top coffin, and you can see in, and he's just singing away very gently to her, and he had a tear in his eye. I was just crying. I think the others, I think Jennifer Ellison, I think she got a bit of a telling off by Paul, because she said we were being disrespectful by going down there, and she didn't want to do the filming and so on and so on. So I think she only did a little bit of it. But the Paranormal Activity, oh my God, was just incredible. It's on the Most Haunted official YouTube channel. If you fancy watching it, so that's Ghost Hunting with Paul O'Grady and friends. The activity in the embalming room towards the end of the investigation is incredible. Even the interpreter had to leave because she was so freaked out. All we kept hearing was, I said, "Can you hear me? If you can hear me, say something." And you'd hear this, our faces were just like, oh my God, I want to run. But we didn't. And then I think you mentioned in the book about Paul talking about his belt, which he'd either tied or untied, I can't remember, but he knows that his belt had been manipulated and fiddled with, and that really freaked him out. And he said, "I know a child has been around me, and, you know, I felt it." And it was an incredible investigation. And I love working with Paul because he had something so special, as we all know. You know, when you've worked in television long enough to know when you meet somebody that has that certain thing. And yeah, Paul O'Grady had that certain something, didn't he? He was
it's star quality, isn't it? Star quality.
Yes, exactly. And he had that in bucketfuls. He'd walk into a room and it was like he lit it up. He really was a lovely person. And I think his energy radiated whenever we did an investigation together. It was almost like the two of us seemed to sort of, stuff happened when we were together. It was fantastic. And I really miss him. So it's lovely that we've put our experiences with Paul into the book, you know, for there forever, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. But I mean, there's lots of laughs in the book as well, aren't there? We do have, it's a good, it's not all bodies hanging off walls, is it?
Don't talk about my sex life like that. No, it's no. There's a bit in. Do I mention? I can't remember now. Do I mention the alien? Do we mention that?
Oh, yes, yes.
We have that. So for those of you who don't know, I won't tell you the whole story. Oh, well, go on, I will. So we were doing one of our first Most Haunted Lives in a house in Derby. And I think you'll know who I'm talking about, but there was a particular medium from Liverpool who was with me. And we were wandering around in the dark and we're live on air across the nation, and the cameraman's behind us with a night vision camera. And he said, we're walking along this top corridor, Ivy, have you heard of those greys, those aliens with those big eyes, the greys? yeah, thinking, why is he talking about aliens? Ivy, there's a ghost of an alien in here in this house. I says, sorry, there's a ghost of an alien in this house in Derby. That's right, Ivy, that's right. And let me tell you now, you see that cupboard door there? Yeah. If you open that door, you'll see the ghost of the grey. He's in that cupboard. Go on, open it. So the cameraman is there with the night vision camera. He pushes forward over my shoulder. I put my hand onto the doorknob. Open up the door. The camera pans down, hoping to find the ghost of an alien. And what do we find? A Henry the Hoover smiling right back at us. Well, of course, I had my earpiece in and all I could hear was the whole of the live truck that sort of, you know, sends the live feed out to everybody's television sets just in stitches, killing themselves laughing. And I had to keep my face straight. So there's lots of, like you say, there's lots of fun moments as well and true stories that not many people know about on Most Haunted, which you brought together beautifully and sort of you winkled them out of me, you naughty little man.
Well, it was great. It's been great to work on. That has to be one of my favourite things to work on ever in my writing career.
And of course, you've written other books such as, let's talk very briefly about the wonderful Morecambe and Wise. You work with Eric's son, Gary Morecambe, on one of their books, which was I read and was just amazed by. And then, of course, you wrote again, I think, with Gary, didn't you? You wrote about Cary Grant and his life.
Yes.
Again,
yes.
Another one.
We did four books together.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Four books. Go on.
No, I said we wrote four books together, and it's. I mean, Gary's a great friend. He's a great friend to both of us, isn't he? I mean,
yeah, lovely
and,
man.
I've known Gary. I'd never met Eric, which, to my great regret, I only knew Gary from about 4 years after his father died, and sadly, his mum's just passed away. But no, I mean, Morecambe and Wise to me are just they're up there. They're the greatest. As far as I knew Ernie. I was very privileged to meet Ernie, but I never met Eric.
Never met. And well, I'll tell you what, they're up there now on the other side, aren't they? Tap dancing and singing Bring Me Sunshine and going, "Way!" And on that note...
What do you think of it so far?
Do you know what? Ruined! Do you know, they're the only comedy act that I can watch now and still roar with laughter. They're just timeless, absolutely timeless, and we'll never have another Morecambe and Wise ever, ever again. People have tried but failed miserably. But absolutely wonderful. And anybody who hasn't read any of other of Martin's books, please, please, please do go and get them because they're absolutely fantastic. Well worth a read and very non-put-downable, can I say. Our lovely new book, Scream Queen, comes out on the 29th of May. Martin, you're an absolute star. We look forward to our next project together of the spooky kind.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now then, let's get the answer to this week's fact or fiction. I should have asked Martin, actually, shouldn't I? To remind you, it was, can you get a ghost to haunt your enemy? That would be interesting, wouldn't it? What do you think? Fact or fiction? Well, the answer is fact. And this is something I've just learned today. Apparently, back in the old Roman era, there was a curse that was used in certain households. The curse would be etched onto a stone, the victim's name... Okay, they'd etch that too. And the certain type of haunting would have to be described on the stone. And then that would be put into a grave for the chosen dead person to incite. So that chosen ghost would rise up and haunt the person whose name was scratched onto the stone. I never knew that. Now then, get in touch with us and share your stories at contact@paranormalpod.co.uk or I am on WhatsApp. Here's the number 07599927537. Also on Instagram, it's @paranormalactivitypod. Stay up to date with the newest episodes by giving us a follow. and I'll be back again same time next week. But if you can't wait until then, visit www.paranormalpod.co.uk, where you can find options to get episodes a day early. Have a great week. Stay safe. And if you do visit any graveyards, take a picture. You never know. Remember, things aren't always as they seem.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.